Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
If you have health insurance, you might be able to see a personal dietitian for $0 out of pocket. Nourish connects you with a dietitian that fits your needs, covered by your insurance. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans, and 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. With hundreds of five-star reviews from real patients, you know you're in good hands. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Let's go around the NFL in the loop style.
Why are you smiling?
Because I love football.
Here's John Lopez and Reggie Adetula.
I'm going to tell you all about how much fun you're going to have this season.
On Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Welcome in our guy B. Scott to the mix. And I'm jumping right into this because there's a lot of things happening simultaneously. So, there's people that are still responding to how they're dealing with stuff. Somebody said they remember 83 and 84, and that's why they say the shooting range is their mechanism to deal with stuff. I get it. Go shoot at things.
Put some pictures on the target.
Yeah, I ain't mad at you there. And then there's other people that are making the association of things that are similar from 83 to 2025. Mm-hmm. I'll let you get to some of those later, but one of them is not even something that everybody would know from the 512 on the text line. They said they were 9 when UH lost to NC State. Their son is 9 and went through the same thing. Like, that is going to be a trauma bond that I bet is sickening to have for the next generation.
Passing down the tradition.
That's
of choking in the big moment.
Hate it.
Never in a million years. Never, ever, ever would I have imagined it'd be so uncanny, so surreal. I was sitting there in the dark rooms. How long ago it was? 1983. I was in the dark room.
Y'all didn't have light back then?
No, we had actual cameras and film that you had to develop.
I just had to take it. It was there.
And David King was in the corner playing his guitar. We're watching the game, and he's smoking a joint. And I can tell you everything that was going on in there. And I was, we stopped work, and we're watching North Carolina State and U of H. We had covered that team. I'd been to U of H games at Hofheinz and here at G. Raleigh White. And it was just like jaw-dropping. I can take myself to that exact moment. And B. Scott, I could take myself for the rest of my life to that exact moment yesterday. Just unreal.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it reminded me of a lot of things. I can take myself to the exact moment. I'm talking about like Houston sports moments overall, like 2019 Astros Game 7 of the World Series. Wait. I was right here in this building in that back studio diagonal from us.
B. Scott, I
felt that.
Hold on. We can't start bringing in other trauma and layering it on top.
It felt similar. Like, it felt the same way.
You're
The 2019 season of the Texans losing it and blowing it to the Chiefs. Like, I started to think of all of these moments like, okay, here we go again with this. I mean, you can even isolate it to the U of H moments. Obviously, I was not alive for the Five Slamma Jamma era.
Right.
So for me, with U of H, the cool part about it is that they even got here.
Yeah.
Because for my whole existence, which is 35 years now, which is a solid number, they had not been relevant up until Kelvin Sampson got here.
Yeah.
Up until the past decade of him being here. So, like, I don't know of them being in a position like this until now. So, like, that part of it is cool for me. But if I'm just looking at it from a Houston sports fan overall, I got moments of reference to go to and say, man, here we go again with this.
All right, so let's step away from this for a little bit to give us a little bit of
We got into B. Scott's thoughts a little early.
I know. That's why I was like, let's save it. This is supposed to be the respite. This is where we talk about the NFL. Yeah, all right, sorry, gentlemen. NFL. Let's have a little bit of a game here, which ultimately, I'm going to be honest, might make you mad. I got 10 players on the board, 10 names on the board, fellas. It is your job to tell me who, according to Bucky Brooks of NFL.com, are the top 10 NFL defenders to build around in the year of our Lord 2025. Again, the top 10 NFL defenders.
Have you seen the list?
To build around.
Let's alternate.
In 2025. All right, fellas. So y'all can do it however y'all want to do. Y'all can come to an agreement. Let's see how many you guys come up with.
Top 10.
Yes, defenders to build around.
Well, Myles Garrett has to be on the list.
That is correct.
I was going to say Myles Garrett.
He is number 2 on the list, according to Bucky Brooks. Say, yeah. Okay, there you go. I appreciate
I'll
you.
Say Micah Parsons.
Number 1 on the list, Micah Parsons, to build around.
Micah Parsons.
According to Bucky Brooks, the ultimate front line hybrid force, excelling as an off-ball linebacker and line of scrimmage pass rusher in a scheme that allows him to see ball, get ball.
When are we going to go to full Homer here?
Oh, no, I'm trying to avoid it.
Y'all got top 2. This is a good start for you, fellas. Top 10.
I'm going to give you a curveball here and give you a chance here and go with, what's the correct Bosa brother?
Nick Bosa.
Yeah, Nick Bosa.
You did a good job.
Yeah.
Number 5, Nick Bosa is
like
a good
I'm gonna
one.
I'm going to mess this up.
Yeah, Joey just ended up in Buffalo. Yeah. I'm sure he'll be solid, but no, Nick's the good
I'm
one.
Really
he plays
bad.
For San Francisco.
I'm really bad with that.
I'm going to try to avoid the Texans, although I think one of them might be in the top 5 or 6. I'm going to say Patrick Surtain.
We're 4 for 4 here. Number 3, Patrick Surtain, the second cornerback. Reigning defensive player of the year, obviously.
Ooh. This is tough.
Oh, I just thought of one. Okay.
I'm interested.
I just thought of one.
I don't see anybody playing along in the text
I was
line
about
just
out.
Yet.
That was about my list right there.
You were like, those
outside
are the ones.
Of the Texans.
I'm going to go ahead and go Homer and go Will Anderson now.
Unfortunately.
Wow, I was going to say him.
Not on the board.
Wow.
Will Anderson
I know the suspense for the Texans fans was killing them. I went on and got you a Texan.
The other one I thought it was T.J. Watt.
T.J. Watt.
All right.
On the board, number 4. So you guys have the top 5, which again, Micah Parsons, Myles Garrett, Patrick Surtain, T.J. Watt, Nick Bosa, but no Will Anderson Jr. Mm-hmm. Y'all feel like keep going or you just want me to give you the rest?
I'm going to go ahead and say Derek Stingley.
He is not on the board. Do you see why I brought this up? Are you starting to feel?
Who made it over Derek Stingley?
That's right.
Who were the other 5? Will Anderson Jr.
You're going to. I'm glad that the last guess that you had was Derek Stingley Jr., correct?
That was going to be my first guess.
Yeah.
Number 6, Sauce Gardner.
Oh, wow.
All right.
The 2-time All-Pro has been as good as advertised as a shutdown corner for the Jets.
Throw this Bucky list Brooks. Away.
Sauce Gardner immediately made his mark as a sticky man-to-man defenders, whoop-de-whoop-de-whoop, so on and so forth, defensive player of the year.
What's this, 2023?
Yeah. What are we doing here, dog?
Yeah.
Going further, Max Crosby ends up on the list.
Oh, yeah.
Roquan Smith ends up on the list as an off-ball linebacker. Mm-hmm. Dexter Lawrence, Jalen Carter, all pretty solid players. Aiden Hutchinson, by the way, not on here. That's
yeah,
a good
I was
going to
say, how does Aiden Hutchinson not make the list?
And maybe it's because he's coming back from injury.
Doing well, by the
he's
way.
He's still really young.
Yeah.
If you're doing this as building around in 2025, if you're building around, I just do not have any understanding as to how you do not have a Houston, Texas defender or multiple
I'd
Houston, Texas defenders on
I'd go so far as to say
here.
I'd put Stingley ahead of Will Anderson.
I
interesting.
Would. Yeah, I would.
Yeah, no, yeah. I still think a all-pro and all-pro level edge defender is still more valuable than an all-pro level corner. I still think that. But, I mean, I get you. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I don't think you can really go wrong there.
Yeah.
But for neither of them to be on the list and to have, and with all due respect to Roquan Smith, who was an excellent football player.
Like, Figgy's like, who?
But, like.
my thing is build around him.
Yeah, you're not building it. Like, you would. To me, a Roquan Smith is an absolute luxury item to have.
Yeah, yeah. Like he's not the cornerstone.
Yeah, if you have a linebacker as good as Roquan Smith, I mean, let's go.
Yeah.
But, like, that's not what you're not building your defense and saying, you know what I need to start it with?
Yeah.
Roquan Smith and then go from there.
Yeah.
Like, that is
exactly.
Yeah, so I found that to be incredible. And I was going to ask the question, which of those texts would you put higher?
I was going to say, or Sauce Gardner for that matter. What are we doing there?
That's the one that I was like, that's the immediate like disrespect. Just not getting any of these guys on the top 10.
I mean, because their defense is actually built around Quinnen Williams, who I think would be on that list higher than Sauce Gardner for me. Like kind of going with the same thought process of building it up front and then from front to back. But, like, I would build my defense around Quinnen Williams over Sauce Gardner and probably, like, just lean toward, you know, up front, you know, guys up front to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he had a putrid season last year.
Mm-hmm. Compared to Sauce. Yeah. No, the timing of that, like Figgy said, what is this, 2023? What is it, 2022? I mean, I'm saying, to me, that is either like just going with what you've been saying, like how you say a thing because you said it before and you never check back to see if it's still true. Or, like, we need to check and see. Who is it? Bucky Brooks, you said, made this list?
Typically really, really good.
We need to see if, like, they got, like, agents in common or if they boys or something. Like, I don't know. There's something's got to be going on there.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't know what particularly went into this evaluation, but I don't know how I get there. All right. Some other things around the NFL. Did you see this? Adam Schefter reported this yesterday. And I'm interested to see kind of what you guys are thinking on what the Panthers are doing here, where they're signing former defense D1 college basketball player Colin Granger to develop into a tight end. So Colin Granger played basketball at Coastal Carolina, Coastal Carolina. Hasn't played football since the eighth grade. Ooh. And he is 5 years removed from his college basketball career, and they are signing him to develop into a tight end. And so, first and foremost, what do you guys think? And secondly, and maybe this is where I should start, what are the chances that he actually plays in an NFL game?
Like, oh, yeah, got to be low, right? Oh, well, I mean, plays in a game, probably maybe not that low.
I still think that that's incredibly low.
He could play in a game, I think. If they think he's, you know, good enough and physical enough to sign, and if they do develop him enough to, you know, either be on a practice squad or something like that, like, I could see him playing an NFL game. How likely is it that he's actually, like, an impactful player that we talk about after this exact moment? Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty low. But I think it's interesting to do because we've seen it work before with basketball players turn tight ends. To me, it's more of a matter of, can his body actually take, because, I mean, it's obviously a huge difference physically, going from basketball to football. Can his body hold up and withstand that? And then is he physical enough to actually play football? Because, I mean, it's a totally, totally different thing. So it's going to be more about him than I think necessarily, you know, just sort of the idea of it. It's like, can this specific guy do it?
I have a slightly different opinion on that. I think, because I read the story yesterday afternoon doing nothing. So I was reading the story.
You weren't doing nothing. You were reading, clearly.
He actually has been working on this. And I think he signed with a former, like a trainer, a football trainer or something like that. So he has had designs on making the switch. It's not like, hey, you want to play football? You know, so yes, it's a very low chance that he plays in the NFL, but maybe not as low as you guys think, because I think he's been working on it. He's worked with football guys. And then the other thing that I'm thinking about is tight end is not like we used to think it is. It's just, it's a finesse position.
Yeah,
now.
That's
you
true.
Know, it's a finesse position where a big guy like that, I think he's got a chance.
And football does seem to be the sport where they are able to take athletes. And I just mean, like, from whatever sport, whether it's soccer, basketball, water polo, or whatever it is. I know that didn't work
out. Rugby, my lotto.
Bad example.
But I'm just saying, though, like, he played in a game, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, and we've never talked about him again for the most part. So, like, that's a great example of it. Like, you can take an athlete.
That's what I'm saying.
From another sport and turn them into a football seems to be the most the sport that does that the most. Now, how good is he going to be?
He did a pro workout. I mean, they signed him after working him out.
So yeah.
There's something there.
The thing that I've always leaned on that I was amazed by is I'm typically used to the tight ends that, you know, the ones that we get on the broadcast, like, you know, he played basketball.
Yeah.
They usually also played football at a relatively high level.
Right.
He has not. So, like, training is cool, but doing the training and playing in organized football, especially at the highest level, is an entirely different thing. And I've seen guys do something similar. Like, I'll lean on Rico Gathers, who I remember him being a guy that did that. And it took him a while to get into a place where he was actually participating in real life football things as opposed to just kind of getting up to speed to the NFL level. It was multiple years.
See, I think you can get him physically ready to play football.
Yes.
But what about the mental side of, like, the getting hit part? Like, if he hasn't been hit in a football game since the eighth grade, and then somebody's going to come block him in an NFL
game.
That's
a grown ass man.
Not somebody.
That's a grown ass man.
Those guys. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Well, any of those guys in the NFL, right? Like, you skipped all of these steps. You never got hit in high school, never got hit in college, and you skipped all the way to the NFL, and now you're going to, like, Like you're gonna chip Micah Parsons.
Mm-hmm.
He's gonna club you and like you're gonna be out of breath. He's gonna knock the
Pop
wind
you
out
on
of
top
you.
Of your head.
I hadn't even thought about that. Like what does the tackles feel like? Don't worry, dog. We're gonna give you some chip help. Here come basketball man to come chip.
That's not like running motion with Coastal Carolina against the SWAC or whoever. I'm just saying like it's not. That's not mid-level college basketball.
What was that school that Kelvin Sampson mentioned last night? Was
I forgot.
Yeah, so Swashcott,
Sasquatch State.
Yeah, this is not Sasquatch State, dog.
In the Toy Poodle League.
Yeah, man, that's Nick Bosa.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Or Joey Bosa at that point.
Or Joey Bosa. Yeah, man, nah, that's different. Yeah.
All right, so there's that. I know you guys saw this. Jalen Milroe accepted an invite to the draft in Green Bay. Obviously, the draft happening in Green Bay. And typically, the folks who are invited to these things are guys that they expect to be drafted in the first round. I was flabbergasted to see Jalen Milroe, a quarterback who people were asking him to run so they could see if he could change positions, going in the first round. Or, like, in theory, this is what it means, that he would go in the first round. Like, would you have accepted this invite if you were Jalen Milroe? Because my answer is flatly, absolutely not.
Look, not as a quarterback. Now, I think Jalen, I hate doing this. But okay,
All right, come up here, Bill Polian. Go ahead and talk about how he needs to play wide receiver.
I think Jalen Milroe could make a hell of a Roquan Smith.
Linebacker.
Yeah,
he is stout.
I really do. But that part aside, no, I don't. Look, this to me, as far as like, you know, him getting drafted as a quarterback in the first round, this just speaks to the desperation of the position. We talked about this quite a bit. Like there is a thirst, dying of thirst for a quarterback. And Jalen Milroe, I wouldn't have thought to have been a top three or four quarterback to go in this draft, much less to actually make it into the first round. But yeah, man, I mean, his intel might be different from our conventional wisdom, and more power to him if it is.
Players can't believe intel.
Yeah, no, it's Lion season.
That's players how you get out here looking crazy.
Hey, we're going to draft. If you're there, we're going to pick you. How many times you heard that?
unless he's just not that embarrassed by the idea of not getting picked by going, which I think is fine. Like, I don't think you have to look at it as a...
It's a free trip to Green Bay.
Yeah, I mean, if you like football, I mean, that might be good for you. So, yeah, I don't think we have to look at it as humiliation necessarily. Yeah.
Fair enough. I personally would, though. That's my personal disposition, and that's fair.
I'd rather do it just watch from the crib.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I've always thought, even if you are slated to be the first pick, I'd much rather personally, and of course it's a personal preference, like put on just a real cool party with my people, and then, you know, do my interviews, whatever, and then pop back over to this party.
But he's a quarterback for Bama, so like there's a lot of Bama guys are probably going to get drafted. That normally happens, so it might just be a party in Green Bay for the Bama guys.
It very well might be. Yeah. So more power to Jalen Milroe. Like, I'm actually thinking, like, is this even for him as a quarterback? Like, could he be on his Logan Thomas, where here you go, now you're a tight end, and a pretty solid one at that, in the way that this goes. I don't know. But I was like, hey, all right, taking that. Mm-hmm. Somebody said, why are you flabbergasted? Jalen Milroe is a product of Texas high school football. automatically makes him an elite NFL quarterback. Yeah. All right,
shout out to Kate.
I don't even have to look who that is.
Yeah. Shout out to Ocho.
That's Ocho reaching across. Is that Ocho reaching across the aisle?
He doesn't often do that.
isn't Ocho east side? I thought
he absolutely is.
Yeah. So yeah, that's solid of you, Ocho.
He's like, look, man, that's one of those. We might be here.
I didn't have to look.
We might beef here, but when it comes to the national stage, we got some solidarity around these parts. All right, B. Scott in the building, in the loop here on Sports Radio 610, which means coming up next, let's get into B. Scott's thoughts. I have a feeling that we're going back to the national championship game. We'll do it.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time, is subject to change. Max one offer per account.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today.
And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning. Because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
You hear the music, and he is here. Brandon Scott from Hiram Clark joining us in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. First time in a couple of weeks and the first time in like 3 weeks that I've gotten a chance to do this with you, so I'm excited to get your thoughts. Unfortunately, I have a feeling that the subject matter is not going to make me particularly happy, but I know that you're going to give us some great thoughts on this. So what you got?
I was happy about the journey. Like, I really enjoyed the ride.
Oh, brother.
I thought this was a great
season. Great season, guys. Great season, guys.
We're not here to lie.
Let's meet them. No, I believe that. Let's meet them at the bus.
Think about it, though. The fact that I had local interest in the national championship game, like that is significant and matters and means something. But boy, was this a collapse and a choke job of epic proportions, man. Ooh. Like this.
Okay, so you're redeeming yourself.
No, this was really, really, really bad. I mean, to be up by 12, and especially like on the backdrop of the way you just won the last game, like you're correct. Supposed to be the team that does that to the other team, not the one that collapses at the end. And Lopez, both of y'all, I thought y'all did a really good job to start the show breaking down sort of how this collapse started, and to me it starts like the way the game changes is the beginning of the second half when Florida starts to muck up the game. You get all
they
those,
start punching back,
yeah, and then you get all those fouls in the first few minutes of the second half, and then you get the fouls on Florida, and then you get Houston's like three fouls in 9 seconds, and what all of that did, the combination Florida fouls, Houston fouls, just the game losing its flow, to me it took U of H out of its rhythm, which obviously you're coming out of halftime, and then they were kind of felt like they were establishing a bit of a rhythm to start the second half, but then you start getting all those fouls, takes them out of their rhythm, changes the momentum. I think momentum is the wrong word, but you understand what I mean, of the game, right?
Like, I appreciate you prefacing like that.
I think momentum is just something that we're trying to find a word that we don't exactly have, so we just use a different one, but it changes, it swings the game right into Florida's favor, and that's how it changes. But then once you get all the way down to those last couple of possessions, I don't see how it happens that way, man. Like, I thought you did a good job talking about how they should have gotten into their action earlier.
Yeah.
But, man, even once they did, it shocked me to see Milos Uzan pick up his dribble in that moment, which I could excuse since he did pass the ball to LJ Cryer, who I probably wanted to have the ball anyway. But then I was surprised to see him not take a dribble at all and then immediately swing the ball to Emmanuel Sharp, who is their third best perimeter shot creator out of their options. And we had just seen him in the previous possession get the ball stripped and knocked off of his leg. This is not a shot at him. This is just me saying I didn't want him to necessarily be in that position. I don't mind him taking that shot, but I do mind the opportunity passed up by Milos Uzan and by LJ Cryer, who I much prefer have the ball in their hands in that situation. So that watching that part of the last sequence surprised me quite a bit.
Let me ask you both this, because I mentioned it earlier in that segment that you're talking about to start the show. I wondered if they never quite got over the nerves. And that's probably unfair. They're a tough team. We know what they are, right? But do you think they were pressing a lot in the second half? And I keep going back to pressing is a better way to put it than nerves. Like, they wanted it so bad, and they were out of character.
Yeah, but I think part of it had to do with the moment, but also, like, the fact that they were missing shots early, you know, and they were able to overcome. That's the thing, too, though, Lopez. Even with that, they were able to overcome all of it and had that moment still at the end. And like, even what I'm talking about, them mucking up the game to start the second half, them pressing, them not being able to hit a three to save their lives in the first half, like 2 of 14 from three in the first half. And I remember making a point of this at halftime thinking, man, you know, you don't have to shoot lights out from three. I don't think we've ever expected U of H to be that type of team, even with the offensive players that they have now. But if you could go like 4 of 14, 5 of 14, like, you know what I mean? Like, that's the difference. And they had moment after moment to either seize the game or take it back, and they just did not.
Yeah, they had a pretty solid, like, 3-minute dry spell, like, earlier in that second half, and it just felt like lost time.
Yeah.
Like, it just felt like wasted time, which typically you don't see from a Cougs team, or at least even if there's a little bit of a dry spell, It's like we all dry together. Yeah. Right? We are just going to make this game to where there's nothing that happens. And the Florida was able to kind of take get a run in that time period, which just feels entirely antithetical to what they typically do. I don't even know where to go from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you could with Florida just make the point that Lopez has made, because I want to do this too since I focus so much on U of H. Mm-hmm. Like Florida is a worthy champion.
Yeah,
right. Like they went and took this game. Like they changed.
They changed
like,
what they were.
Like I even thought as it was happening. Like I don't know if they want to mix it up with U of H like that. Like we got some scrappy dudes. Like that's kind of playing into their hands. And I thought about that kind of just like from a philosophical standpoint. Do you want to allow the other team to take you out of your game, or do you have to, like in the championships atmosphere, have to acknowledge what a team is and say, hey, I have to fight the fire with fire and meet the moment. Like, right. Like maybe I have to be able to get out of my comfort zone and play a little different from how I normally do. And I got to give the Gators a lot of credit for doing that.
It was a classic example. You guys have both hooped. You guys have both heard this. What do you do against a pressing team? You press them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do you do against a trapping team? You trap them. What do you do against a real physical team that wants to beat you up? You get real physical and beat them up. And that's what the Cougs did.
Yeah.
I mean, the Gators.
Yeah, definitely fought fire with fire. So, I mean, hats off to them. But like I said earlier, man, it did feel like, oh, not again.
Mm-hmm.
Not again. You know?
That's what I can't get over.
Especially because I did. Like, it's different. Like, this is even different from that Texans example that I had from the Texans Chiefs from several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because even that didn't. Don't know if I ever felt like they were going to win that game.
That was a slow burn.
You know what I mean? I've never felt like they were going to win that game. The Astros example, I was sure.
Right.
You know, in this game, once they're up 12, you know, I'm like, man, they've got this. Mm-hmm. They're going to win this game. And then they didn't.
Yeah.
They absolutely didn't.
They really and truly did not. I was flabbergasted. I'll use that word. I'll use it again. I stood there just looking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just dead into the ether. And I had no feeling about it being in that place. From the 713, can we talk about next year's team? And yeah, we absolutely can if that's where you want
to
go.
Nobody wants to do that.
But, and we will. But like in this moment, that's one of the things that's kind of crazy about this is that it feels like the best chance that you had. And you've been in this place again. Like it's instructive, the 83 season. You did make it back to the national championship that next year.
Yeah.
And then you went into the wilderness.
Yeah.
As an organization. And so not saying that you can't make it back, but I do wonder, did you just squander what was your best chance at getting it done and getting this program over the hill into that championship place?
And even if you win at some point, it's a squandered opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
That's just one more that you could have had.
Right.
You know, and this is at that point you're talking about being greedy, but it is a missed opportunity flat out. Like no way around it. As far as like looking forward to next year, the one thing about college sports, especially college basketball, but college sports in general, it's not like the pros where you feel like you have a decent sense for what teams might look like the next year.
Yeah.
Like it's the day after the championship is not the best day to feel like you know what the whole – you don't know what your team is going to look like. You don't know what the
and
other teams are going to look like.
It's so flighty in this era.
Yeah, no, that part is hard to predict. What you can feel good about is like some of that cheesy stuff that I was talking about earlier, the journey. A lot of that is based on – the culture and what they have sort of established here,
mm-hmm.
and you feel like it's going to be competitive from here on out. Are they going to be the championship?
Oh, no, that is true.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely, 100%.
You can expect to watch competitive Houston Cougars basketball for as long as the Sampson family is involved in it, I think.
How many more years is Kelvin Sampson going to coach?
Yeah, man, I mean, he's 69.
And one of the things that's wild is that, and I know that I saw this in a way where he was kind of being asked about it, but I don't think you rarely see Kelvin Sampson go and like kind of reflect mm-hmm. on his time. I've seen some of those kind mm-hmm. of reflections on his time and his 35 years of coaching or what have you. And not saying that inherently indicates that he is ready to give it up. But we do know that he has negotiated into his contract that his son is his successor,
which
right?
is great, and it's the way it should be. But we don't know what he's going to be.
No, but my point was more just. There's eyes on the end at some point. We may not know exactly when that is, but that kind of does make me wonder, when does that turnover happen and could it happen sooner rather than later?
Yeah. Well, and to the point, I also wonder, because I don't know them. We obviously have interacted with them some, but don't know them well and don't know exactly what the personal dynamic is. But I wonder, does that increase the urgency at all? Like, are you trying to hand that down to your son? Like, how soon do you want your son to be the coach? Does that matter? Is that really
is this a good time?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, what is a good time? Yeah. I honestly don't know. Like, they obviously did that for a reason. Mm-hmm. But is that like, and the son, like
Kellen?
Yeah. How long does Kellen kind of sit there and say, "Oh, hey, Dad," you know, at some point, I'd like to take this.
I don't think he cares about that.
I don't think he's nudging his dad out, but I do wonder if what
I like,
is,
this, I like that episode of Succession that you've created in my mind.
I'm ready. This could be Succession. This could be Righteous Gemstones, where they love each other.
Oh, please don't let it be like Righteous Gemstones.
Oh, I don't think it's like Righteous it's definitely not like Righteous Gemstones. That's for sure not the case. But I do wonder, what is that like? Like, what is the push and pull, the tug and pull there of the future for the Samson family? And I feel good about it. Like, just to be clear, I feel good about it. But it is like, going back to the conversation about opportunity cost and the moment and him being 69 years old and finally getting here and getting this opportunity and this chance and being that close for leading the game. We talked about this in the break, Reggie. They led for no less than 38 minutes. What do we calculate?
A minute
and 3 seconds is how much of this game that Florida led
by the eventual natural champion.
It only mattered because they led at the end when the clock was at zero.
Yeah, that's
tough to swallow.
Incredibly tough to swallow, especially for a team that had not lost in recent memory and had done such a good job of closing out games and, you know, finishing out situations that were necessary, including a few times in this very tournament. Very rough to see. B. Scott, appreciate those thoughts, even if I don't appreciate what happened last night. I think we're all in that place. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's get into what's popping, including, hey, you want me to make you feel worse? I got something for you. There's an Astros pitcher that's going on the IL. We'll talk about it next.
The biggest stories in sports and entertainment. Sports Radio 610 style. In the Loop presents What's Popping.
All right, let's get into what's popping here in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. And I'm going to try and step away from the Cougs for a quick moment, just so that we have a moment to breathe. But everybody's got conversations that we would love to have about this Cougs team. And, of course, I'm going to step right into the Astros, which they have not been all that fun. And then also, we didn't get some fun news, unfortunately, here yesterday. I think there was one four-letter word that I sent accompanying to this news when I saw it yesterday to you five fellas.
I can call it up and read it if you want.
I don't think that you should. I don't think that would be good for either of our
careers. Yeah, that was it.
Let's say that it was damn.
Yeah. Everybody want to come back tomorrow a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Well,
not trying to make this the last show, man.
I'm starting to wonder about Seth.
What is this?
Did you hear the handoff?
I did not.
Okay. Ooh, just go ahead and radio rewind later.
I'm going to find that on the YouTube because it's clean there.
Yeah.
It's pure and pure, I should say.
I got a spoiler alert. It ain't that clean.
No, it's
not. I'm going to say pure.
I actually dumped it.
You did?
Did you? Yeah, God bless you. Thank you for doing
just
that.
Just because.
Very good. All right. I do all that to avoid actually having to mention, especially Arrigetti broke his thumb yesterday. How, you ask? Because he wasn't pitching. No, he wasn't. That was a Hayden Wesneski day, who, by the way, 7 innings of work yesterday. So shout out to him, obviously giving the bullpen a little bit of a respite, even though Abreu came in and ultimately gave away the couple of runs that gave the game back to the Mariners. Spencer Arrigetti was, you know, doing his off day, you know, work. He was playing catch out in the outfield as simultaneously the Mariners were taking BP, which is a common occurrence.
Happens all the time.
For the outfield to be occupied by the other team and the other one team and the other team being taking batting practice. But typically there's someone who's just kind of standing watch to kind of help make sure that like this doesn't happen. Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know if there was not anyone there, but it just did not work as you know, was hoped. And the thumb on his throwing hand was hit by a baseball, and now it is broken. And, I mean, that has got to hurt for a starting pitching rotation that has been really good, and he's part of it that's been really good to start.
Yeah, man, freak accident. You hate to see it. Spencer Arrigetti, somebody that you have high hopes for if you're an Astros fan. Based off of his, I would say, up and down rookie season, but mostly promising. You feel good about him being slotted there in that third spot in the rotation. Like, no mixed feelings about that. Really excited about his season. So this is going to obviously derail that. But I do think the good news in it, or the good news from the night, was to see Wesneski give you what he gave you. Because now you're going to require more from everybody else. Like, everybody else is going to have to step up more. Like, now he slides up a little bit. And you know, the rotation is going to be kind of wonky now. We'll see what they end up doing. If it's AJ Blue Ball or if it's Colton Gordon.
He really wants it.
Like we gotta.
he just man. every time AJ Blue Ball comes up,
he wants it.
Yeah, well, let's see if they can give him that opportunity. Let's see if he gets a chance. let's see if he's a starter or a reliever, or how they end up doing. Because what they also have is Ryan Gusto in their bullpen already. I don't know if he's stretched out enough to actually go and be a starter. That's maybe a conversation for them to have. It's definitely kind of a, like, the timing of it, because, like, to me, I would say if this happens in May, June, July, or around the time we're expecting to get some reinforcements, mm-hmm. you should have at some point an abundance of starting pitching. At some point, it's just not there yet. So the timing is obviously awful. They do have starting pitching depth. Just a lot of it is already on the shelf. So I'll be interested to see how they're able to withstand this. The one thing we've always been able to trust with the Astros is how they handle pitching. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, and just to clean something up, it was Taylor Scott that gave up the two runs. I forgot. Abreu came in after trying to get that out of there in the eighth.
Yeah, I don't think we should overthink the fact that he broke his hand. It happens. Someone wasn't paying attention. I mean, that to me, that wasn't necessarily the thing that I went, oh, crap. That's a four-letter word.
It is, not the one I used.
But what really gets me is when things like this happen, and you mentioned how good they've been with pitching, we don't know what they really have down there. You know, behind, we don't know about Blue Ball. We don't know about, you know, any of these guys that much. So it's just like, while you're not hitting and you're 10 games in, not hitting the ball collectively, it's the last thing you need. It's more of just like a baseball thing. It's like, boy, this is the last thing they needed right now.
Right, and that's really the biggest part of this, is it feels like it's some level of indication of luck. I don't know that anybody or everybody subscribes to that kind of thinking, but when you're in a rut, it's easy to get to that place where you're like, all right, another thing, right? Like, you got Yordan Alvarez out here striking out consistently. You've got, you know, your big 3-year, $60 million addition in Christian Walker not hitting the ball all that much, right? Or even if he is striking the ball and making contact, he's not finding grass very often. You got your prospect that you brought up before you needed to after only 20 at-bats in the minors, looking like he probably could use a stint in the minors. Like, all of these things on top of, and you have one of the pitchers that you were hoping to come back and offer some level of relief. He gets shut down. Thankfully, at least, Lance McCullers is scheduled to make his third minor league rehab start on Saturday for the Space Cowboys, so maybe that he can come up relatively soon and then occupy that fifth spot for you.
And you mentioned in the last hour about, or at least asked a question about, if you're having fun watching this team.
That's right.
You want to know what's really not going to be fun? Watching some young pitcher from the minors try to figure it out because of this freak accident that happened. Mm-hmm. Like, and we talked about this, especially in the midst of all of these other issues, all of this calamity going on around the team on top of it, and now, like, you did at least feel like there were some things that you could rely on, right? You can rely on Framber Valdez for the most part, you know, with some exceptions.
Well, we'll see.
But for the most part, feel like you can rely on Framber Valdez, like you could rely on Hunter Brown. Spencer Arrighetti was becoming one of those guys that you felt like you were going to have to rely on, whether you felt comfortable about it or not, because he was your third starter and you got all these other things going on. And then to have him out, and like I mentioned earlier, it's going to require more of a Ronel Blanco, who hasn't quite looked as good this year as he did to start last year, and didn't even look as good at the end of last year as, you know, as he did at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, now you need more out of Hayden Wesneski, which, again, that was the silver lining, was that he pitched well.
Really,
so you're like, okay, maybe now he's my Spencer Arrighetti for now, and now we need a new version of last year's Spencer Arrighetti, whatever the case may be. But no, it's the timing of it, like I mentioned earlier, is the worst part.
Yeah, and I mean, you can maybe even see something like Ryan Gusto, who's been, you know, long reliever, or come in and maybe get stretched out to a starting situation. But then that also puts a level of tax on your pen, right? And Logan Van Wy has already been brought up, right, to help with some of this. But yeah, you don't love the additional strain that adds to the team in general, who is trying to find a way to steady the ship this early in the season. Again, back in action against the Mariners tonight. It is Framber Valdez, and it is not Logan Webb. That's the entirely wrong team.
Not Logan Gilbert.
Luis Castillo.
Okay, Luis Castillo.
Mm-hmm. Is on the mound.
Man, all of their dudes are dudes.
Yes.
Yeah, yes.
They got dudes out there. Yeah. And I was going to say, it's like, it's not going to matter much if they don't figure out how to hit the damn ball at
correct
some point.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Like, I mean, obviously your pitching matters. I'm not trying to be silly, but at the same time, like, you at some point are going to have to start swinging them bats. Like,
very much so.
Like, what is going on, guys?
It's time. It's time.
Seriously.
Weird freak accident for Eric Getty. What's the weirdest way that you've gotten injured? Text that in. I kind of want to hear it while we do this. Okay, so I did sales and step away from the Cougars. I'm not actually talking about, we don't have to break down a game, but I do want to ask you if this is fair or foul that happened yesterday. I didn't really see this live, but I circled back around and I did see this on social media. So Walter Clayton Jr., who was a very, very good player and who for a long time the Cougs had held to 4 points early on in this game. At the end of this game, he did something that I think a lot of people will view admirably, but I wonder if it's fair or foul. After the game, while people are celebrating on the court and, of course, Cougs are like tearing up into their jerseys, he goes around and he starts consoling Cougars. And I know instantly people go, yeah, that's cool. I think I do wonder if those guys in that moment were like, I'm not trying to hear that. Is that fair or foul?
Nah, I think it depends on, see, it's hard to know without knowing like the exact, like I wish I could be a fly on the wall or just kind of around and hearing what the conversation is throughout the game, mm-hmm. what their relationship might be existing outside of that game. And as competitors, like I think you understand how hard this is, right? And I mean, we get to it. It's that close of a game, a one possession game. It literally could have gone either way. Like that easily could have been Will Clayton Jr. and his teammates. And so I think when you're in that moment, you can identify so much more with what that player is going through because you are like as happy and as excited as you are in that moment.
Yeah.
You are that close. It's a thin line between here and there. So you're that close to being in that exact feeling and emotion as that other guy, and I think you can feel for him. So, yeah, no, I think I think it could easily be something where, as a competitor, you don't want to necessarily hear it, but on the other side of it, you want to extend that sort of grace to somebody because you're right there in the thick of it.
I don't even think this is a hard question. I think it is absolutely fair. Number one, it's respect. You know, the respect that he showed in the moment after, where he should, you know, he could easily have just been ha ha pointing and laughing and we won and jumping around, but immediately went there. And then the second thing, and you guys know this as well, these guys have probably known each other since eighth grade or played against each other, been in the same tournaments, watched each other, Disneyland, Las Vegas, New Jersey, all the Nashville, all the big summer league tournaments, you know, LA and high school and all-star games and all that. So there is at some level of, there's no question in my mind, there's a relationship between those two guys.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what level the relationship is, but a relationship, and then there's the respect. Absolutely fair.
Yeah, I think it's got to be like game recognized game.
Yes.
And I would go on the other side and say, I don't know, man, I would get it, but you're also kind of a jerk if you can't appreciate your opponent coming over there to show you some love out of respect, like coming over there to show you some respect. Now, I would excuse it because of the moment.
Yeah.
But I mean, come on, man.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't have to do that.
No.
They could just go over there and shower in the champagne or whatever it is.
And that's a lot of people's first instinct.
Yeah.
Is just jump around, right, forget about anything else, you know?
Yeah, it seems like a good dude. I do want to make it clear, right? I am the one who was putting upon those Cougs players that it felt like they didn't want to hear it. They were just so wrapped up in, you know, obviously grieving that moment. So I don't want to make it seem like there was something that was very clearly on the Cougs that they were making this a negative. I can imagine being in that place where you're just like, I'm not trying to hear that one bit. A big game in some ways for the Rockets today. They're not playing, but they have an opportunity to officially solidify second place with Lakers Thunder that's happening tonight in Oklahoma City. It's one of those little baseball series in a way. Yeah. They just played, and the Lakers put it on the Thunder. The Thunder have had a weird weekend, right? Because they lost to the Rockets in pretty remarkable fashion. The Rockets obviously handled them up pretty well, and then the Lakers had a really good shooting performance to beat them. Can the Lakers do it again, or will the Thunder win and officially solidify the Rockets in the second seed?
Yeah, I was going to say, man, this is now kind of, I know this is a Houston sports show, but it's kind of looking at the Thunder like, hey, man, what's going on with y'all? Like, because look, I know they are the number one seed, and they've had this successful season, and it makes sense for them to maybe take the foot off the gas a little bit, but it's not like they actually have. They got their guys out there playing, and there's not really much of an excuse for them to be struggling the way that they are or to not be able to rise to the occasion the way that they have not. So that part is interesting. But I just want to say about the Rockets real quick, man. How about all of a sudden, like, right? Like, you had, and I know this was talked about a little bit yesterday on the shows, but you had this stretch of them not having a lot of success against teams, against playoff teams.
Correct.
Beating up on scrubs. And then they go out there and handle business against Oklahoma City and Golden State.
Correct.
And now tonight, if they get that, you know, if you get that loss with the Lakers, then you know, you can solidify that number two seed. Like, all of a sudden, they look like the team that you have to respect and have to talk about, not just as some kind of feel-good story, and also not as some kind of easy out for somebody, but as a team that can actually threaten in the Western Conference. Like, to me, the difference between Oklahoma City and the Rockets and the way we talk about them and the actual difference is like the actual difference is far less. It's far less.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's funny because I was talking about this with Lopez yesterday, and it might have been off air. There was a point in time in like February thereabouts where, you know, the Rockets were really hitting on all cylinders, and I was looking at this team like, okay, I think this is the type of team that can definitely win a first round series and then make it really interesting in the second round series to the point where they could be a Western Conference Finals representative, right? And then you got to some places, right, the type of time that you were talking about where they played, you know, where they hadn't gotten a win against a team above 500 since February, right? And then you go, maybe not. Like, maybe this is a slide back. I think I'm back in that place where I'm looking at this team, and you're seeing some national folks kind of talking about that too, that these teams are not afraid of anybody at the top, even though the Thunder have like a solid 16-game lead on everybody else. Like, this feels like it's a ripe opportunity for the Rockets to maybe steal away the opportunity that we typically think about, or like away from what we typically think about as the path in the NBA where you have to go and lose. Like, they might have the opportunity to do that thing where they go, no, we're just going to announce ourselves and then make a crazy run.
Yeah, I think for much of the season, we've leaned a lot on the fact that we have not seen them do it before.
Yes.
And that hurt a little bit of the open-mindedness of, like, just entertaining the possibility that you might see it for the first time.
Yeah, excited for that. Excited always to have you in, B-Scott. Appreciate you sitting in with us, giving us your thoughts.
It's a fun hour.
Always fun. Always fun to have you on. We'll let you go do what you got to do. You're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's jump back into it, ladies and gentlemen. What part of last night's game will haunt the Cougs the most? Let's talk about the larger aspect of it for your Cougars next.